Hey guys, and welcome to a brand new episode of Nerds Talk Movies. My name is Taylor Cole, and I'm going to be your host today. Joining me for this amazing episode that we're going to have is the one, the only, Drew Garrison. Drew, how you doing?
I am excited. This is one of my favorite DC animated movies. One of my favorite DC movies overall, actually. This is a really good movie.
You know, we're not going to get into the actual general discussion right now, but I have kind of a hot take. I don't know if this is a hot take or not, but I think if you add 20 minutes to Batman Under the Red Hood and add Oracle and Gordon scenes into it and just put in live action, you got an amazing Batman movie.
I could see it, actually.
I don't think much has to be changed. Yeah, sure, I think with animation you have the more flippy acrobatic stuff, so you can't do that in live action, but I think story-wise you could really just port this over into live action, and of course you gotta cast well and everything, but you get all that done, you have the story right there to use. I would not be mad if we ever saw just a live action straight up adaptation of this movie. That's how much I enjoyed it.
See, I think like this movie could have been what would have pulled together the DCEU if they had used Batfleck, because they had it set up and everything. And if they had just made a movie with this, I feel like that would have been the movie that pulls people away from the MCU to the DCEU.
Yeah, except also Snyder, I think, said it was Dick Grayson. To which I was just like, but why, though? It's so unnecessary.
Yeah, it's like, it's a good change for comic readers, because, you know, we all know the death of Jason Todd. It's like, it's pretty much one of those legendary events in comic book history. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, Zach. I don't think you could write that very well. It's like, don't get me wrong, I like some of Zach's stuff, but it's like, the DCEU proves to be the thing that you are not a good writer for that.
That's neither here nor there. You clicked on this podcast. You've heard us talking about it already. Today, we're going to be doing a retrospective on Batman Under the Red Hood. Here's a synopsis for the film, courtesy of IMDb. Quote, there's a mystery afoot in Gotham City, and Batman must go toe-to-toe with a mysterious vigilante who goes by the name of Red Hood. Subsequently, old wounds reopen, and old, once-buried memories come into the light, end quote. In terms of cast and crew, here are a few of the major players for Under the Red Hood. The film was directed by Brandon Vietti. The film was written by Judd Winnick. Casting was done by Andrea Romano. And the music was done by Christopher Drake. Moving on to the cast, we have Bruce Greenwood voicing Bruce Wayne. Bruce Greenwood, after this, would go on to play Batman in a lot of DC animated projects. We have Jensen Ackles voicing Jason Todd, aka the Red Hood. John DiMaggio voicing the Joker. Neil Patrick Harris voicing Dick Grayson / Nightwing. I wanted to say the Riddler, because he's always been fan casted as the Riddler. He's voicing Nightwing in this thing. Jason Isaacs voicing Ra's al Ghul. Wade Williams voicing Black Mask. And Jim Piddock voicing Alfred Pennyworth. Now that's out of the way, Drew, you are our sole comic expert right now, with Tristan off battling.
I have the power.
Pigeons or seagulls or whatever the hell he said he's been doing. So, take it away. Do you have any connections to make from the comics to Batman Under the Red Hood, the animated movie? The floor is yours.
Well, for one, I have the power right now. I am the only comic expert. Bow down before me.
Drew's already drunk with power. It's been 2 weeks. What happens when Tristan goes back from his vacation?
It'll be a battle of the nerds. And he'll be too tired from the seagulls to stop me. But in all seriousness, this is actually an adaptation of Batman Under the Red Hood. It is the comic storyline that happened in the main Batman book. And it goes from Batman 635 to 641. There's a four-issue lull in it where we don't have anything happen. And then it goes to 645 and to 650. And also, a part of it is in Batman Annual number 25. It is the story that revives Jason Todd, who died originally in Death of the Family. So, yeah, it's pretty good reading.
So tell us a little bit about Death in the Family, though, because back in, what was it, the 80s, I believe?
I think it was in the 80s.
Back then, there was, Jason Todd wasn't the most popular character, to say the least. And there was a little poll ran by DC.
Okay, so, Jason was created to replace Dick Grayson after Dick had left being Batman's partner. He had grown up, and he went to the Titans, where he would eventually become Nightwing in that story. Jason was to be the replacement. However, he was probably the worst replacement, because he was just Dick Grayson with a new coat of paint. I think the only difference was that originally he had different hair. So,
Not to, like, cut you off here, but I think that's also a criticism some people had of the different Robins, too, is they kind of all looked alike, like, literally, down to the hair, the body type, and everything. I was just like, is that the same person? It, like, casual people think there's only one Robin, I think.
Okay, so for those casual people watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, Dick and Jason were probably the only time where the Robins were exactly the same. When Tim Drake came along, he was very different. He was not as athletic or as good as Jason or Dick. He was more of a smart, he was more of the smart guy, but he did get trained by Batman. And just FYI, if you're trained by Batman, you're automatically like in top 20 best martial artists on the planet. Just FYI. But, no, they're not the same. It's like Tim Drake is not Damian Wayne. Damian Wayne is not, Dick Grayson. In fact, Damian was Dick's Robin before Bruce's. So that's a big, thing.
I think you see that in animated movies as well down the line, which I feel like to tie this back into Red Hood real quick before you continue on. I feel like under the Red Hood, the Flashpoint paradoxes, they've really helped DC go. You know, this animated movie avenue, it seems like it can make us some money. Let's just dive into that. So,
yeah, I kind of wish that they would just, that they would, like, have faith in their animated movies to put them in theaters a bit more. But, I guess animation just isn't going to be in, 2D animation is never going to go back to theaters, except in Japan, which, thank God, it's still doing that there.
But back to Jason Todd here, like you said, he was a lot like Dick Grayson.
And oh, yeah, carbon copy. We know
that's not the case now, so what happened?
So, in order to improve Jason's numbers, they reshuffled him a bit. They took away him being a circus performer that lost his parents during an act, you know, Dick's origin story, and changed him to be a kid who had the cojones, who lived on the streets of Gotham and had the cojones, the largest cojones, to actually go to the Batmobile and try to steal the wheels off of it. So, this kid's got some bravery in him. A little stupidity, but also some bravery. And Batman basically catches him, follows him. I can't fully remember. He either follows him, or Jason takes him back to his, living space, where Bruce talks with him and everything, and Bruce realizes, this kid's got talent, but he also might end up being, like, a criminal in the future if I don't do something. So, Bruce takes him on, and he becomes his Robin, his new Robin, and he's a lot different from Dick now, because he is very much more, has an attitude and everything. He's an orphan in this one, so he doesn't fully know his parents or everything. Like, he knows who they are, but it's like, they're supposed to be, like, dead in this one. So it's a really a lot different than what he originally was introduced as. But his numbers didn't increase as fast as DC wanted. So, unfortunately, this is where Death in the Family comes in. Because Jason found his mother again in a different country. She betrays him to the Joker, and Jason is killed by the Joker before Batman can get to him. Now, an interesting thing about this was that there was a vote to see if Jason would live or die. It's one of the few times any comic book company has done this. And obviously, like, they voted for him to die. But a unique thing was that during the voting, one of the writers, I think it was either Jim Starlin or Jim Aparo. I hope that's how you pronounce his name. Aparo might be a better pronunciation. Jim Aparo. But during the voting, apparently it was believed that someone hooked up a phone with a computer to basically call for Jason's death for the next 2 hours. And this led to 200 votes to Jason's death. And they say if that didn't happen, Jason would have survived, because the voting polls, there was only a 50-point difference. Now, this hasn't been proven, but, you know, one of the authors is saying this, so it's quite a possibility.
Well, that's very interesting, and I want to go ahead and get into this discussion here about Batman Under the Red Hood, the animated movie, because I'm going to come out and say it, I'm really glad he died, regardless of the circumstances behind it.
Taylor is a savage.
There's a little bit of a backstory behind this movie and me here. So when this movie came out, I wasn't a huge superhero movie fan. I watched the Avengers, the MCU movies. I thought they were really good. But I wasn't fully into like the Flash or Green Arrow stuff that other shows would do later. Or like I am right now, to where it's like, oh, I know all these characters and Doctor Strange and all these other movies. So I wasn't that knowledgeable about all that. And then I sat down and I watched this movie, Batman Under the Red Hood. And I was like, it's all right. You know, I'm a teenager at this point. I'm like, it's a kid's movie, whatever. Well, it really wasn't. There's a lot of blood and dark stuff in this movie. And I loved it. I think it is so fascinating to put Batman, a character whose whole thing is, I'm not going to kill, I'm not going to cross that line. And I never really understood that too much as the character. I thought it just made him like, oh, he's the Boy Scout kind of character. It's kind of stupid. To what I saw at the end of this movie and that clash of ideals between Red Hood and Batman. And I finally got where Batman was coming from. To where he was telling Jason, like, if I cross that line, if I kill the Joker, I'm not coming back. I'm not going to be able to just kill him and be done. If I kill the Joker, I'm killing Penguin. I'm killing Two-Face. I'm not stopping. Because he just knows himself that much. And knowing like how powerful Batman is, he's one of the smartest people in that universe. He's one of, you talked about like, hey, you're trained by Batman. You're pretty good at fighting. There's a reason for that. Batman could probably beat a lot of highly skilled people in DC. So yeah. He's a living lethal weapon who could take down multiple Justice League members. So if he goes rogue, that's a big fucking deal, and that's what he's trying to avoid. So this is the first movie that I think I understood his moral code more than anything. Even like The Dark Knight, which we've reviewed, we've given it a 10 out of 10. I even felt like that was like, okay, so he just has a rule he doesn't kill. Whatever. This was the first one, even though it's not delved into completely, where I was just like, I get it. I understand that. But here's the thing, though, Drew. What did you think of Batman Under the Red Hood?
Well, I thought this is a great movie. Regardless of whether you're a Batman fan or not, this movie gives you everything you need to enjoy it. And in 75 minutes, I mind you, it gives you everything you need. You feel the emotional weight of everything that happens in this movie. And this is probably one of my favorite art styles for the animation period, because it's really good and it fits for allowing acrobatic stunts while also keeping that hard Gotham noir style.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't think the animation is... It's an older movie. It's, what, at least 10 years older?
12.
12 years older. So it's not going to 100%, I think, hold up to today's standards of the best animation. But I still think it's pretty good. I do like the character designs for Batman, for Nightwing, for especially Red Hood. Again, this was really my first introduction to the character, and I was just like, this guy is badass as hell. Who is he? And it's like, oh, he was a Robin. Oh, that's more interesting. And this is what I was talking about earlier with the clash of ideals. I found that to be so interesting between the two characters. And it kind of goes to show you don't need a 2-hour, 3-hour movie to be great. What I was saying with, like, you add 20 minutes onto it and put it in live action is so you can add characters that I think could have gotten a little more, like Jim Gordon or Oracle, which Oracle gets a shout out indirectly in this movie. But Jim Gordon, I think, is seen at the very end on the bridge, but that's pretty much it. So,
yeah.
I mean, it is proof that I think you can tell a compelling story in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
So what did you think about our voice cast here?
I thought that it was phenomenal. There isn't a bad voice in this movie. Everyone is giving their A game. And
all right, I'm going to be the asshole here. There's one miscast. I don't have a problem with the voice acting necessarily. I just don't think it worked. And that was John DiMaggio voicing the Joker.
Really?
It felt weird. Like, there's some lines that I loved that was like, that was the Joker. That was really good. But there was something where, towards the end, where he was like, party pooper, no cake for you, or something like that. Which, it's a line that, yeah, sure, I could see the Joker saying. And just the way it's also delivered, which is like, I don't know, it's just off. Plus, he sounds, like, less psychotic in a way. Like, a little more calculated than I think they were trying to go for with the character.
See, I liked this version of the Joker. The reason why is because this is supposed to... Like, the way this Joker was drawn and depicted, it was more of... This guy is older. It's like, he's supposed to be as old as Batman, since he's, like... They pretty much confirm... He was the Red Hood that fell into the chemical vat and one of Batman's first villains he came across. And so you feel it in his voice and everything, but it's still just so freaking cool to me with how he speaks and everything. It's like, I don't think you could get this if you put like any of the other Joker voices, whether it be Mark Hamill or now that I think about it, how many other Joker voices are there?
That's a very good question. There's a lot of Jokers.
Yeah, there's a lot of Jokers, but most of them are voiced by Mark Hamill. So it's like, it's really hard for me to think of one. I think Troy Baker also voiced a Joker as well.
Yeah.
So there's him, and I know Kevin Michael Richardson did one, but I cannot remember what Kevin Michael Richardson did it for. Still, though, like I said, I feel as though John DiMaggio did a good job of bringing out this Joker, especially for his crazy movements, because the laugh is creepy, but the biggest thing that got me was when he is going crazy after I don't want to spoil it just in case.
That's the best line I think he had. Yeah. Which, that's where it's like, I'm not saying he had a bad performance. I think he's a great voice actor, by the way. If you don't know who John DiMaggio is, look up his resume. It's pretty fucking impressive.
But he has voiced your childhood and you didn't know it.
Yeah. But I just felt like there was a lot of stuff in here that I was like, man, I don't know. He really crushed the Joker. That one line, though, where he was like, you managed to somehow win, and everybody still loses.
God, oh, that was so dang. Beautiful.
That was awesome. I was like, man, that was great. That was a good line.
Yeah, it's like that. The whole confrontation at the end when he's talking. It's like every part of that I just love. Even the part where it's like
a 10 out of 10 party pooper.
Yeah, it's like
it's a 10 out of 10. Everything from, and this is another standout to me, the MVP of this movie is Jensen Ackles as the Red Hood.
Yes.
Man, there is a reason people fan cast him as Red Hood, despite Jensen Ackles not really being in the age range anymore for it.
And it's not just because well in this movie.
Yeah, and it's not just because he's popular from Supernatural and the thousands of other things he's awesome in as well. It's because, like you just said, he is so damn good in this movie that everybody's like, that's Jason Todd. That mm-hmm. is the character that everybody really loves, but also is like, you're still kind of the bad guy. And I loved his performance in this movie. It's so great. That ending that you were talking about earlier, where he was Red Hood has Batman at gunpoint, and he's just like, he pulls out where the Joker's, where he had him tied up, and he was like, why didn't you just kill him? Because if he had killed you, I would have went the entire span of the globe to find him and kill him. And like, there's so much emotion in that speech.
It's so raw, and it's a son asking his dad, why didn't you avenge me? It's like, it's just so
And it's not good. Even out of, like, I blame you, dad, or anything like that. It's just, why is he still here? Is the question he has.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the things with all the Robins and everything. It's like Batman with Dick Grayson, it was of the time period. They needed a kid sidekick. With Jason Todd, it was trying to replace him. But afterwards, it's like Batman makes it clear to any person who joins his crusade, you could die at any moment. And I think Jason Todd was the catalyst for him remembering, I don't want to bring people in. And the other Robins so far have all been people who brought themselves in. Batman has never recruited a Robin since Jason Todd. And I love that attention to detail.
Yeah. But when it comes to Red Hood and that relationship, I buy into that almost immediately. And I love the fact, because it could have been easy. They could have pulled the simple route that it's like, I blame you for not saving me. And it just seems lazy. Like, this is the conflict between the characters. No, that's not the conflict. They both, I think I mentioned this before, save each other at different points in the movie. The whole conflict is he wants Batman to kill Joker. That's his entire plan. Just this one character. That's all he wants. And Batman doesn't do it because he picks his ideals over his son. And I found that very intriguing. When it comes to the Robins, though, here's another thing I found so interesting about this movie. I think this movie doesn't put Batman in the greatest light, and I love that. Because it's not like it's brought completely to the forefront to where it's like, man, you're taking in kids to be your sidekicks in this superhero crusade you got. But it's inferred, like, indirectly. Like, why are you doing this? Like, this is so irresponsible.
Yeah, so in the movie and in the comics, it's like, it's pretty much outright stated that Batman believed that if he didn't take Jason in, like, Jason would have ended up being a criminal and a very dangerous one, because he already had the makings of being someone who would grow up to be just unfeathered by morals or morality and have the potential to be someone dangerous.
And 100% true. 100% true. Yeah. But here's the thing. The end of the movie, which I love because it's so tragic, where you get the flashback with Jason in the suit as a kid, and he jumps up on the Batmobile. And the last lines of this movie is Jason saying, this is the greatest moment of my life. And that's how it ends.
It hits you at that point
that's like, Batman's not the best person.
He is not, and Bruce is called out on that a lot, and it's like that is also one of the things of, again, the attention to detail of after Jason and everything, because again, Bruce didn't recruit any new Robins. They all went in to join his crusade, and he was against it. Like, for any fans of Tim Drake, you would know Bruce was against Tim Drake ever becoming Robin, but it was necessary for Tim Drake to become Robin, and Tim Drake wanted to, so it's like there was really no stopping him. And of course the next Robin was, of course, Damian, who was already trained to be an assassin. Again, he forced his way into become Robin. In fact, he tried to kill Tim Drake to become Robin. So
that same thing character.
Yeah, it's like every Robin after Jason has been someone who went into the crusade themselves, and Batman's like, okay, I can't stop you, but if you're gonna do this, you're gonna do it under my rules, and you're gonna be trained by me, so that way you're less likely to end up dead.
Yeah, but like with Red Hood here, you have this story to where, yeah, he saved Jason from becoming a criminal, but it also ultimately led to his death. Potentially twice, because the ending of the movie is pretty ambiguous with what happens to Jason, which I love too. Glad it doesn't give us the answer there, because it gives you that sense of this is a tragic story. So, but it still brings up that question. It's like, is Batman almost as bad as the criminals he's bringing into Arkham? Because he's the one who's bringing them into Arkham over and over, letting them commit all these crimes. He's the one who's taking in kids to fight a superhero crusade that he has. The mission, I think, as he calls it in this movie. Or the job, one of the two. And it's just like, ah, man, this is really fucked up when you really think about it.
Yeah. Like, Bruce is ultimately good for Gotham, because Gotham is so much of a hellhole, it needs any angel it can get, even a dark angel. But is Bruce a good person? It's like, in truth, yes. He doesn't always make the best decisions, though.
And before we get into...
Can I talk about one character before we get into anything?
Is it Nightwing? No.
I want to talk about Nightwing, but I want to talk about this small character that I feel like that a lot of people sleep on in this movie, that just is so good as far as characterization goes.
Who?
The character is none other than Ra's al Ghul.
Oh, good. I love Ra's in this movie. Ra's in this movie is really good, because I think in a lot of adaptations, everybody's getting to how Ra's should be kind of portrayed in the most compelling way, which is he's the villain, but he's also noble. Like, there's that extra layer to him that's like, I kind of like you. I shouldn't, but I do. And I think Batman Begins got that. I think I've heard great things about the way Gotham portrayed the character. Of course, we've talked about Arrow quite a few times on how they did not do that too well. But most adaptations have portrayed Ra's al Ghul pretty well in that regard. And this is no exception. This was a fantastic portrayal of the character.
This movie does Ra's justice. It's like, he's calm and collected even when his arm is about to be broken. He has that aura of authority to him even when he's in disposition. And moreover, he's like a dark Arthurian knight, is the best way I can put it. He has morals. He doesn't take a life unless it is necessary for his plans. It's like even Batman like calls out, you never shied away from bloodshed before, but he's like, any unnecessary bloodshed is a life loss. And it's like, damn, that is just perfect on the perfect race writing. And I'm glad they didn't result him to like, I felt supremely guilty that Robin died, and it's like, what about all the people in the bank? And it's like, fuck them people. It's like, nah, he's just like, has that nobility to him to where every action he takes, he calculates.
Yeah, and one thing I did love about the character, too, is Ra's kind of felt like he was in his own penance, if that makes any sense. Like, he knows he did something really messed up, and he pretty much makes no excuses about it. I kind of really appreciate that, too. Like, the fact that Batman goes to him and he's just like, hey, here's the story. And like you said, he explains in his own way, his own twisted way, that I don't take a life unless it's part of the mission. This was just, I shouldn't have trusted the stupid clown, because of course he was going to betray me at the first chance he got. You can tell it kind of destroyed him a little bit afterwards. Like, because he took that deal with Joker, and afterwards he was like, why was I so stupid? And this is what it caused. Just great character to me. Even though he's not even a major player in this movie, he's, well, how many minutes? I would say about 5, it feels like.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't hit double digits, so I'd say 5, at most 6 minutes.
But he makes an impression. And you know who else makes an impression? Nightwing. So Neil Patrick Harris has been fan casted as Riddler for so many years, dating back to the Dark Knight trilogy. But I gotta say, he pulls off a very good Nightwing. He's not young enough to pull it off now, which really sucks. But man, he has the voice for it.
The thing that gets me is how good of the dialogue they gave him. It's like he can go from being this jokester and everything to being someone who has legitimate complaints with his father figure. Like, one of my favorite
lines...
And he
can have legit good jokes, and then some of those are just like, ah, man, that's really bad, but I feel like I was kind of written to be bad.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to hit on all of his jokes, so I thought that was pretty good, too.
Yeah. My favorite line from him in this movie is when Batman gets in the car all sneaky ninja-like.
Yes,
and he's
great.
Like, for once, can you just say get in the car? Is that just so hard?
Yeah, that was awesome. But I the only thing I'm in nitpick territory here, alright? This movie is so amazing to me. But it does kind of suck that Nightwing gets sidelined and he doesn't get part of this. Because you can... I don't know if they were trying to go for, like, Nightwing had a relationship with Jason, like a brotherly friend kind of relationship, or they even knew each other, but it would have been nice to explore that, too. Like, who was Jason to the guy he replaced?
Yeah, I know in the comics, they don't really have a lot of interaction, and in fact, it's only when Bruce dies in the comics that they ever have any, like, real true interaction, because before it's always been like, oh, this is the guy Bruce replaced me with and Dick is mad about it and everything. So it's like there wasn't a lot of interactions that they had, but I do think nowadays Bruce Dick does see Jason as a brother. What kind of brother is still up for debate, because Jason flip-flops with how he aligns with the Bat family.
Yeah. And that's something I think you see in today's media, too, with not only... this is off-topic, but it feels like they're trying to inject Scarecrow in the Jason's backstory a lot here. I don't know why. But between that and also I feel like Dick Grayson and Jason Todd are in a lot more... pieces of media these days interacting with each other, so I find that interesting. And then when you look at this and it's just like, yeah, we need to sideline Nightwing so this can be Batman versus Red Hood. I mean, it's still awesome. It's just one of those things that's like, man, that kind of sucks we didn't get to see his reaction to it, whereas we saw something like Alfred's, which that was heartbreaking when he was looking at the samples and testing it and Alfred, that's a terrible way to
I know,
realize,
right?
He's still alive.
It's like Alfred is still holding on hope that he is dead, because it's like, no, this don't do this to me, don't do this to Bruce.
Yeah, alternative is worse for them, because he's over here taking out criminals and taking over the drug trade. So we talked about the ending already, how much we loved it too.
Mm-hmm.
One of my other favorite things about this movie is the beginning.
Oh,
I'm
yes.
not even talking about the crowbar scene, which is just brutal, where Robin dies. I'm talking about where Red Hood is introduced, which is just one of the most badass introductions to a character I've seen. Where mm-hmm. he's just... One of the things I love about his characterization, too, is, yeah, he's taking over the drug trade in Gotham. He's taking over the criminal organizations in Gotham. But to him, a little bit like Raisha, it's calculated.
Yeah.
And his whole thing with Bruce is, I can control it. You can't stop crime, you can control it. And one thing with Red Hood I really like too is he has this disdain for all the criminals that Jensen Ackles, I think, just nailed.
Mm-hmm. Like, the way they characterize him is really good. And from the moment that he's introduced, like, you get a sense, even if you've never heard of Red Hood and, like, who he really is, you get a sense that he's not, like, the other criminals and everything, because of one addition they put into it that really cements, like, oh, this guy is, there's something unique about this guy. He says, no more trafficking to kids. And it's like, that honestly brings up a lot of questions. And as you find out who he is, it all starts to make sense and come into play. It's just really good.
Yep, because he's a street kid who's from Gotham, and he's not necessarily a full-on criminal. He's trying to at least control crime. And
yeah, I think the best way to count him is more of an anti-villain.
Yeah. I know the character in comics especially would really toe that line between, is he an anti-hero? Is he a hero? Is he a villain? Where does he really go? I think he fits more in between those two. In between the anti-villain and anti-hero. I think he fits so perfectly there, just pissing everybody off and doing his own thing.
Yeah, he's definitely more anti-hero now, but it's like, he does toe the line between it. He can be an anti-hero, anti-villain. I think there was even one point in the comics where he was basically raising new villains. They were all, like, orphaned villain kids and everything. Or rather, they were going to be villains eventually. And he just, like, takes them in and starts raising them and everything. And it's like, you just never know what the Red Hood is going to do next. I think that's the best way I can say it. You never know what he's going to do next. It depends on where he decides to land that day.
Yeah, and I think another thing I really like about his characterization is he was trained by Batman, so he knows how to fight. He knows how to think. He's a very smart character. But his fatal flaw compared to a Dick Grayson, compared to a Tim Drake, is he is hot-tempered. And you also see that in this movie. And that's what I really like. That's his fatal flaw. That's what gets him to fail his mission. It's because he is so emotional with Batman that he could have just killed Joker, would have been done. Instead, he wanted to make it theatrical and make Batman decide and make it a whole thing with the bomb, and it just led to his downfall, and I found that very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when it comes to, in the Batman circle and everything, we always, like, attach something to what the Robins are best at. Something that they might even beat Batman at. Where Dick is the acrobat. He's faster and more agile than Batman, even at Batman was at his age. So, Tim Drake is the detective, and he will one day be even better than Batman at that.
Barbara isn't Gordon. Raish and Bruce both comment on that, saying that Tim Drake has the potential to be smarter than both of them?
Yes. So Raish calls Batman detective out of respect. Tim Drake is the only other person who has earned that respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Damian's the heir, I would say, because Cassandra Cain is more of the martial artist. But Damian's slowly coming into the martial arts role because they're slowly edging out Cassandra, who is my favorite of the Bat family, and I'm sad about that. But Barbara Gordon is the tech person. She is able to hack and do the tech stuff. She's basically like the Iron Man of the group, just without an Iron Man armor. Jason is the planner. He basically took up the planning of Batman the best. And it always comes back to bite, because as good as Jason and Batman are at planning, both of them also have their fatal flaws when it comes to each other.
You see that planner aspect of Jason too in this movie, because when Jason and Batman fight, Jason kind of has a leg up on him a few times because he's the one who's getting the drop on him. He's the one with all the fancy gadgets. And it's not until Batman takes away all those gadgets that the fight finally goes back in Batman's favor, because Batman is the one who taught Jason, and he's a way better fighter.
Yeah. It also does have something to do with the fact that Bruce doesn't actually want to take down Jason. Well, Jason, I don't think he had a problem with taking down Bruce. Yeah, he's trying to save him and everything. And it's like, Jason accounts, but that's the thing about Jason. It's like, you can't really hold that against him, because he accounts for all of that. If you see the plans this guy makes in the comics, it's like Jesus Christ, you be afraid of ever even talking to a person when it comes to Jason Todd and his plans. He is as good as Batman is as a planner.
So, man, I don't know really where to go next here.
Can we talk about Black Mask? Because I feel like he's also an important part of this movie.
Okay, so Wade Williams voices Black Mask, and I've watched Prison Break. I love that show. Wade Williams plays Billick from Prison Break, and I recognize his voice immediately. Also, Wade Williams is great as Black Mask in two different adaptations, wildly different adaptations, between Ewan McGregor, who played the character in live action for Birds of Prey, and Wade Williams voicing the character in this movie. I love both of these more than any other version of Black Mask I've seen for so many different reasons. Like, this version of Black Mask in this movie is so extra, and he's awesome for it.
He fits right into Gotham of this being this city where the crazies are.
Not only that, though, like, he will go out, like, there's a scene where he's literally just punching out his own guys, which is just so comical because you're just like, why? And then there's another scene where he's just being, you know, extra again. But then he stops, and it just pans in on his face, and is just emotionless. So, great job from Wade Williams here.
The entire time, you never think Black Mask is a joke. So, it's like you feel that he is a threat. He might actually take down the Red Hood someday. I mean, not someday. Sometime in this movie and everything, and it can change up everything. But it's like, he doesn't feel like a side character.
He doesn't feel like an idiot either, because he's the one who figures out, like, when his assistant was talking about, like, oh, maybe Red Hood or the Batman's waiting on the Red Hood to kill you. And Black Mask is like, no, that's stupid. He doesn't do that. He'll swoop in and stop him. The whole reason he hasn't done that yet is because he can't catch him.
Yeah, and he even when he's talking to the assistant in that scene, he also mentions there might be something else. And it's like, Jesus, this guy really knows how to dissect his enemies and everything, and it's freaking scary.
Yeah, and his flaw in this movie is going to the Joker, which I found very interesting. I like the Joker in this movie, and I like John DiMaggio. I'm not trying to shit on the voice actor or the character about this, and he's, like I said, he has some great lines. I don't think the last bad. I think it's pretty solid. I think what it is like, for voice acting, my bar is so high for the Joker that, like, when it's just good, it's just like, it's alright. You know what I mean?
I can understand that. I just love this Joker because I think I was Mark Hamill'd out when this came out, because this was when Batman content was spewing out of DC like crazy, and Mark Hamill was most of the Joker stuff in it. So that might also be why I love it so much, but it's like, it's also like the fact of how creepy the Joker can be. Like, at one point, like, at the beginning of it, it's like, he taunts Batman saying, you're just gonna put me in a body cast again, hinting to the fact that that was right after Jason died. Batman went and just pummeled him and left him near crippled, which...
Wait, so he didn't... Hold on. So you're telling me this Joker got beaten up to the point where he was in a full body cast, and he didn't go get tattoos and a tattoo on his forehead saying damaged in a grill?
Like, no, he didn't.
Man, this movie sucks.
But as I was saying, it's like, one of the things that got me in the creepiness of Joker wasn't just that body cast line. It was after he killed Black Mask guys. And, like, right afterward, he was like, he made his list of what he needs and everything. And then he said, I'm going to also need some guys. Not these guys, because they're kind of dead. And the laugh afterwards just made my skin crawl.
Well, not only that, but then the scene where he's about to kill Black Mask and all Black Mask soldiers. and he drops the lighter down there, and then the fire just goes up, and I was just like, oh shit.
And the smile and pose he makes shows that he is just enjoying this to
a Batman team. Saves him and everything, but still, at the same time, that one image is just like, oh, this Joker is not, he is not to be fucked with.
Nope. And I just love also the arrogance that Black Mask, which kind of mirrors Ra's al Ghul's arrogance, because it's like, Black Mask believes, I can make a deal with the Joker, and it's like, none of you guys are getting it, are you? And it's like, it's not like Jason's death is surprising, because the thug at the beginning mentions how Nightwing was the first Robin, so they know that he died, and they have to know that Joker killed him. So it's like, Mask, I get you're desperate, but of all the people, why did you go to the Joker?
You know, you brought up a good point. I didn't even think of that, about how Ra's and Black Mask have parallel stories in a way, to where they believe they can trust the Joker. No, you can't. That's one thing you just cannot do. It's not a good plan. It will never turn out well, no matter what you think will happen. But I don't know. I don't know what else to really say. I feel like we've gone over a lot here, man.
We've gone over a lot, but there is one thing I feel like we need to discuss in this movie.
What's that?
Batman himself. We've talked about him in the context of Gotham in this movie, but we haven't talked about him in depth. First off, this is one of the few Batman movies where we see all sides of Batman: the martial artist, the detective, the crime fighter, and the gadget man, all in one, and it doesn't feel like it's any of the sides are overplayed. I love him, like, dissecting every clue that Jason's giving him, like when Jason calls him Bruce in front of the train and he has to, like, get into the audio to hear it.
Mm-hmm. He's got really good audio software that I envy.
Hey, get that Bat computer. It's the most powerful computer in the world, man. But there's also the fact, something that no one else will probably think about, he took the sword with Jason's blood on it after the fearsome hand of four. No one else would probably think about that, but Batman did. And it's like, you can immediately infer from A to B after Jason gets cut. I also kind of wonder if Jason did that on purpose in a way, to, like, show Bruce who he was.
I don't think so. That fight scene, which, by the way, was really good, I think that was legit. Like, Jason did not know he was getting chased by the Fearsome Four, and he was legit about to die. So it was a good thing Batman came in to save him, which he says, like, I'm just stalling, knowing that Batman knows he's going to figure out who I am, that he's going to come for me. So yeah. I think he's stalling in hopes that Batman did figure out. So
imagine if Batman was just even a minute late. But when they're fighting together and everything, it's like, the two are just so amazing together, and it shows you how well Jason and Batman are as partners. Jason and Bruce really are really well as partners and everything. But there's also the points where you see Bruce trying to be sort of a father figure in the flashbacks, but it's like, he's also still just that crime fighter and can't separate that, because that's who Bruce is. And my favorite part is just when Jason reveals his face to Bruce, and it's like, we knew, like, he's Jason. That's something that's just, we knew where we were gonna see, but it's still just such a shock, because you see how Bruce is trying to hold in his emotions and everything. It's just so good.
Yeah, I really like Batman in this movie. I think we've talked about it plenty of times in this podcast, of how it shows Batman both as the hero and both as the borderline villain, to be honest with you, because he causes a lot of havoc indirectly in Gotham City, and the creation of this Robin who dies and then gets brought back, and everything that happens in this movie is because of Bruce Wayne, because of Batman.
I wouldn't call him the villain of this. I'd say he did make the mistake that caused the catalyst of everything. But I wouldn't call him the villain personally, but I can see why someone would call him the villain. So it's like, I'm not.
And again, this is, I'm not the Batman hater or anything. I'm not going like, oh, I want this Batman to be evil, or some people are with Superman. Like, some people love that Injustice Superman shit, and it's good, but, you know, I don't want that in every Superman adaptation. But, again, with Batman, I found those versions of the character to be so compelling, where it's like, he's not perfect. Yeah, he's really smart. Yeah, he can fight, but he's kind of got a screw loose himself. Yeah.
Well, he was born in Gotham. I feel like anyone from there has a screw loose. Even Gordon, who is the most sane man in Gotham.
This is just a fantastic movie, I think, from top to bottom. You ready to get into our final pros and cons?
Sure. Why not?
I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
Pros, the voice cast is amazing. Even with John DiMaggio being near the bottom of my list for that, he still does a really good job. Again, I think it's just such a high bar for me with the Joker character that that's why I've been a little hard on his performance in this episode. It's still really good. And Jensen Ackles is perfect as Red Hood. Bruce Greenwood does a great job as Batman. The Red Hood Batman dynamic is so damn good in this movie. The action sequences are very good as well. Neil Patrick Harris is great as Nightwing. I love Nightwing in this movie. I kind of wish, like I said, in this episode we got a little more of Nightwing, surprisingly, in this movie than we do. We didn't even talk about this in the retrospective itself, but there's an Amazo fight at the beginning.
Yes,
it
there is.
It doesn't feel totally out of left field either, because it works to build that. Like, oh, Nightwing and Batman have a rapport together, too. And they could fight together. So I thought that was really good. But all the action sequences are great. Everything with Red Hood is just stellar. I can't keep coming up with different synonyms for great. But that's what this movie is. This movie, to me, is just... We'll get to it in the final ratings.
What about your cons?
I don't really have any cons. I'm going to be honest with you. This is a near-perfect movie. I would say maybe give it 15, 20 minutes. More.
You just want more.
I don't have much to say. Maybe the animation doesn't hold up as much today.
Yeah, I feel like that's with any animated project, even like live action stuff. Not all of it holds up, so that's a rarity.
Like the ending of this movie, to me, I think that's what, like, it's the bow on this gift that is Batman under the Red Hood. Just the extra, like, Batman tries to say, Jason, we don't know if it works. He might be dead. He might not. Then they go back to the Batcave, and Bruce tells Alfred, this changes nothing. And you can tell, it changed something for him. Like, he went through it in this movie. He gets in the Batmobile, and we get that last flashback, man. In the last words of this movie, there's no, like, epic music playing. There's not this positive vibe going on. Just the last words of this movie are Jason as he's ready to go out on patrol for the first time. This is the best moment of my life.
God.
Fuck. That sucks.
It hurts so much. Okay. I guess my turn. Honestly, most of my pros are similar to yours. The voice cast, stellar. I disagree with you on the Joker one. I think he knocked it out of the park. He's not like the top five, but definitely top 10 Jokers for me. The art style, really cool. It has some unique looks for some of our characters, and it really helps emphasize both Batman and the Red Hood in this art style, which awesome, but also Black Mask looks really cool in this art style as well. Nightwing is really cool in this art style. It's like, oh, I just love this art style. The Red Hood versus Batman dynamic throughout the entire thing, regardless of when Red Hood is a few steps ahead, to when they're on equal footing, to when they're fighting together. It's just every moment with them is just so good. Action sequences are really great. There's a lot of cause and effect in the fights, and you can feel like all of the different ways that the characters fight and everything. Like with Nightwing, he is way more acrobatic in his fighting. Then with Batman, like when he does a freaking backflip to avoid Amazo throwing one of the shipping containers, and that shows how acrobatic Nightwing's fighting style and just movement is compared to Batman, who's more straightforward.
Off of that, Red Hood also has a different fighting style as well, where he's using more gadgets than everybody else, and he's using the knife, and I thought that was a very good detail.
Yeah, and he also tries to dissuade Batman's movements a lot, which is how he keeps getting the drop on him. Like when Batman tries to tie him up with his cord, instead of cutting it from before, he waits until Batman feels comfortable, and then he cuts it and then tases the cord. And then he also stabs his cape in order to keep him from moving. All so good. The fight scenes are really well planned out. Love it. Like I said, the Batman aspects are also really cool. He's a fighter. He's a detective. He's a scientist. He does it all. The character reactions, like Alfred and Ra's al Ghul. Characterization in general, honestly. I feel like I'm going to just keep going through a list if I keep going. So I'm just going to finish it off with saying everything. Everything. I don't think there's a bad thing in this movie, really.
So let's get into our final ratings, then.
Oh, before we get into that, I just remembered something. I checked Rotten Tomatoes before we started. This is one of the few movies with 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yep. Which Rotten Tomatoes isn't the end-all be-all for
it's
movies
not.
Or television series, and neither is our opinion. So,
yeah.
Again, that's what I was about to get into, actually, about this. So, Drew, what would you give Batman Under the Red Hood on a scale of 1 to 10? As always, just because we give something a 5 or a 6, it doesn't mean we hated it. And we give something a 9 or 10, it doesn't mean it's perfect. We typically grade these things more positively because we try to have fun with the movies and TV shows, and we don't take grades to be the end-all be-all of how we felt about something. It's just an arbitrary number that we're using to have some fun with it. So, yes, Drew, with all that in mind, what would you give Batman Under the Red Hood on a scale of 1 to 10?
10 out of 10.
We already talked about all the pros and cons, man. Like, I'm right there with you. I think this is 10 out of 10. Easy. From the voice cast to the action to the story, it leaves me wanting more, but not in the way that I'm unsatisfied with it. It leaves me wanting more because of how satisfied I was with it.
Like, you're kind of greedy. You want more.
Yes, and I'm like, you told this story so well. Can you give us 20 more minutes, please? Some awesome stuff happening. But, you know, this movie is probably one of DC's best. Not just in animation, but overall. Let's wrap up shop, though, Drew.
All right.
What you working on? Where can people find you?
You guys can find me on YouTube, on Fanfic World. Once you find me there, you'll be able to find some of my videos. And if you look up on social media, I am on Twitter and Instagram. I am Drew_Garrison_.
You can find me here on this podcast. You could also find me occasionally over on our gaming news podcast called Power Up and Game. Be sure to, if you like anything you heard today, you can join our Discord, which is for now the best way to get in contact with us. Please consider dropping us a rating as well. It helps us out tremendously. It would also be awesome if it was a positive rating. Check out the latest episode of Power Up and Game. Also, check out thenerdstash.com where you can find all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and more. We have tons of reviews, guides, lists, and opinion pieces that you may find interesting. So be sure to check that out if you got the time. Finally, we've talked about this several times before, but next week is Clash Week here at TNS Network. We have our first episode of Clash at the Stash premiering on Friday, May 27th. It will be live at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. During Clash Week, there won't be any new episodes of this podcast or Power Up and Game. We're spending that time working on Clash at the Stash and getting the ball rolling on next month's edition. What can you expect from next week's Clash? Well, it will feature myself as I face off against a mystery opponent, with Tristan Benz returning and acting as our honorable judge. What is the topic for this episode, you might ask? Well, I'm going to be trying to come up with a pitch to introduce one of the following into the MCU: Deadpool, the X-Men, or the Fantastic Four. Also, it is important to note there will be Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness spoilers involved in this episode.
So you've all been warned.
Yep, so you've all been warned. I'm also going to mention that whenever we record Clash at Stash, just to be sure. I want to thank Drew for joining me. I want to thank anyone for listening in. Again, we're off next week due to the hoopla that is Clash at the Stash. We'll be back the following Sunday for some kind of retrospective. I'm not sure what it's going to be yet. I have some ideas. We're going to talk about that after the show. But we'll see you then.